So here's something of the context that we hear this story today. Obviously, it's the context in which I have heard it. We have an American president and babies separated from their parents and put in cages, and the White House press secretary being asked to leave a restaurant with her family because the staff refused to serve her food, and the Homeland Secretary being booed by people in a Mexican restaurant whilst she's eating a meal. We have boats of refugee people floating around, unable to find land that will allow them to disembark. People in exile. We have protests on the streets on the same day, wanting exactly the opposite things from each other, in the midst of economic pressure from multinational companies, as well as a growing trade war between those who are supposedly allies and have been for many years. We have an African president surviving an attempt to blow him up. And we have a World Cup which appears to be relatively harmonious on the streets of Russia, quite unexpectedly in a way, but players being investigated for political and racist celebrations of goals. And all that whilst Prince Charles and Lady Camilla make their first visit to Salisbury since a Russian state-sponsored, it would seem, chemical weapons attack on the street there. And a wider background of reinventing national identities and world leaders at odds and calling themselves names, as well as myriad other stories about gang culture and knife crime. And let's not forget some good news that in Saudi Arabia, the ban on women driving ended at midnight last night. Hooray! What a wonderful world. And here we are, the people of God, listening to the word of God and making sense of who we are and what does God require of us in these days. Perhaps even more than that, where do we see God appear in these days? Both Old and New Testament are full of stories where God shows up, from walking in a garden where there's harmony and enjoyment, to the times when the brokenness of human existence is the stage where God intervenes to call human beings into relationship. Whether that's in a burning bush or a pillar of fire, whether it's by commanding nature and parting waves to save people, whether it's fire from heaven or the still small voice in the midst of a storm on the mountainside, God made and God then came out to search us out. Always intent, it seems, on making a people. People whose purpose was to love God and care for God's earth. The first way that God's people began to know God was as the one who led them through the water to freedom from Egypt. Freedom. Freedom not to be slaves to other masters. Freedom to choose the way they would go and who they would follow. To choose who they would love. Moses did his best to herd them through the wilderness until that moment when God set down some rules, well, ways of living, really. People learning to live in community need organizing principles. You can't have everyone just doing whatever they want. One person's freedom is another's worst nightmare. So Moses meets God and is given the Ten Commandments. And they're in Deuteronomy, and important if we are to understand Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Hear, O Israel, the statutes and ordinances that I am addressing to you today, you shall learn them and observe them diligently. The Lord spoke with you face to face at the mountain, out of the fire. At that time, I, Moses, was standing between the Lord and you to declare the words of the Lord, for you were afraid because of the fire and did not go up the mountain. And God said, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods. before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. Fairly straightforward place to start. Sounds simple enough. But then the Bible story takes us onwards into countless moments when people turn away from God, who led them through the waters to freedom. It seems that people very quickly, when in trouble, turn to gods of their own making. Even whilst Moses was up the mountain getting the commandments, the people were busy making a golden calf to worship. Still, God leads them on, and eventually they make it into the promised land and become a nation in their own right. God in their midst as they carried the Ark of the Covenant with them. But after they settle, after they build their villages and towns and cities, they decided they wanted a king to rule them. God was placed in a temple so people could visit. Well, certain people could visit at certain times. They began to worship a human king while everyone else was doing it already. At the time when Daniel's story comes, Israel and its kings have gone from the glory days of David and Solomon to constantly fighting off enemies and defending the nation and being carted off into exile, a succession of kings that act like gods and require obedience and taxes and decrees are given about who to worship. The prophets go through the same ups and downs that God's people face. They don't stand beyond it. They're in it, and they try to speak and act God's word in the midst of it. They try to challenge God's people to come back to God as the people look for who will save them from their latest enemy. Which brings us to today's story and the book of Daniel. One of the greatest nations has besieged and ransacked Israel and carted off many of the people to Babylon as slaves. Daniel and his friends are placed in the courts of the king. They're trained, they're given new identities, required to worship a new king. Some of them do very well because, well, they have integrity. They are noticeably different in that they don't give in to the excesses of court life. They seem trustworthy. They're given more and more authority. The king sees their potential. But kings rarely acknowledge their own weaknesses. Kings believe their own press. Kings make statues. And I thought, well, let's have a look at a few of those today. So we'll just run through this quite quickly. There's Chairman Mao. Oh, there's a few in America of the presidents. There's a toppling one. I thought it was quite good to see one of them coming down. Good old Saddam. Yeah, maybe that's where they started thinking themselves as gods, maybe. Yep. Giza, massive, massive statue. Just knowing how you would make some of these things is quite stunning. All different ways in which power and human authority and worship and Peter the Great. It looks a little bit like something from Peter Pan, that one. There we are. Liberty. There are so many more that one could pick. If you can go back a bit, that would be good. There we are. That'll do. Yeah, is there a slide that's gone missing there? There should be a fiery furnace slide, but there we are. Okay. So there we are. Kings and rulers. There's so many more that we could use. World leaders that fall into the trap of thinking they are invisible and like gods. There is a Donald Trump statue, but it wasn't suitable to be put up in public, I didn't think. So I didn't think you'd want to see it today. So when Nebuchadnezzar is the latest to build an enormous gold statue to command respect and love, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have a choice to make. To keep their own influence and power. to go with the flow, because what does it really matter? Live to fight another day. But something greater is symbolized in this moment. Something bigger is at stake as they stand before the golden statue. Maybe they heard again the voice of God. I am the Lord your God who led you out of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. Their integrity. The very thing that made them different was at stake. You might even say that their faith itself was at stake in this moment. So I wondered, which would be worse for them? To be thrown into the fiery furnace, or to live knowing that they had bowed down before the king? I wondered what was the real fiery furnace in the story. Was it the one that would singe their eyebrows from 50 paces and consume them in seconds? Or was it that moment when they had to choose who they would serve? The God who led them to freedom, or the self-made God King to whom they would be enslaved forever. And in the midst of the furnace, God came to them. They were not alone. They were saved. That's the essence of the story. These moments come to all of us. Maybe not quite so dramatically. Probably we don't even notice them a lot of time. But they're moments when we have to choose who we are putting our trust in. They're moments when our actions will reveal our hearts. And God always looks at the heart, not outward appearances, whether that's the heart of kings, their staff and followers, or ordinary people like us. Well, I'd go so far as to say that even kings are ordinary in God's eyes. At various times in the Bible story, people are invited to choose who they will give their love to. So, one final statue for us to look at. Because whilst thinking about this fiery furnace story reflects our lives, reflects the ways our faith is tested every day as we're surrounded with temptations to trust wealth and possessions and other people and flawed leaders and status of our own and even substances that we can consume. Or even thinking about our world leaders. I remembered the story about one of the religious teachers that we heard coming to Jesus in the midst of arguments about law, being tested to see if he was going to be true to their understanding of God. And seeing that Jesus answered them well, he says, which commandment is the first of all? And Jesus said, the first is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And the second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no greater command than this. So here is one who deserved a statue, who always pointed those around away from himself towards God, who leads people to freedom. Just think how many times Jesus was invited to claim his glory. Take up arms, overthrow the earthly kings. Even Satan offered him the kingdoms of this world if he would bow down and worship. No. Every time, Jesus pointed away from himself and refused to take God's place. Even strung up on a cross. Now there's a statue. With a jeering crowd, if you just come down, we will bow down and worship you. You can't get much more of a fiery furnace than that. Jesus pointed away from himself and towards God and others. Love God and your neighbor as yourself. Why that? Well, I wonder if that's because the way our neighbors will learn to know the God who leads them to freedom will be as they witness the way we follow Jesus and point away always from ourselves to love for God. If we demonstrate the way God leads us to freedom, if they are to see God, it will most likely be in us. We're going to sing together. I will offer up my